I am unashamed. What about you?
So, a current update. Individuals living in these United States of America, some might say, I wonder, you know, what is it that you guys do? Well, without y'all really realizing it, in the last 16 days, 16 days is blue-winged teal season. Blue-winged teal start in the Dakotas, the Canadian prairies. They fly to the Yucatan Peninsula every year.
You can shoot green wings.
Yeah. You can shoot what?
But you can shoot any teal.
You can shoot any teal.
But it's typically
The teal move in the month of August and September, the early migrators, somehow saltwater, some department in saltwater, if saltwater made the teal, they put in them that every year y'all going to go to the Yucatan Peninsula, whether you like it or not. You're going there. If you're an Arctic tern, you're going to Brazil. You can never be there, but you turn a tern loose up there after everybody's gone. You've never been there before in your life. And all of a sudden, you just end up in Brazil in about 15 or 20 days. Saltwater, some department out there said, we'll put in these where they have to fly south every year. So the migration of butterflies and birds, notwithstanding, they all fly south. Well, we wait on them. They're a food source. So these birds, we got 16 days to see if we can harvest some. It's a 240-something year tradition ever since the country was founded, hunters hunting birds.
But it began in Genesis 9.
Began in Genesis 9. I've made the animal world the birds of the air. They'll fear you and dread you. That's why you got to hide. They're wild. And they, as a food source, up until then, just veggies. Now you can eat anything. Awesome. So anything that walks, crawls, flies, or swims, it's sanctioned by God, and this tradition is a good one in America. So we wait patiently. We get in a hide, a blind. It's all brushed up. We have decoys that look like teal. We can sound just like teal, and you hope that a few will fly by. So it was spotty. It's hot. It's dry. They move on these weather patterns, weather fronts, but no fronts came. So we get down to Friday, 3 days before it was over. My prediction was going into this season, there'll be one day, at least one, where they'll eat us up. Well, Friday morning, last Friday morning.
Which means about they'll move in. Yeah. Some people don't know what that means.
Yeah, 4 or 5 days ago, we keep looking into the air. We go every morning, and all we're looking at is a few crows fly by.
And a crane.
Every once in a while, a blue jay or a dove. And, well, look, there's a deer over in the brush, yeah. But we're looking toward the skies, looking for teal that are supposed to be migrating this time of year, going to the Yucatan. Well, we saw very few until Friday.
Yeah. And
today is about Wednesday, so 6-7 days ago, five, we're looking up, and all of a sudden, even before we saw them, we hear this sound. It sounds like that. You're like, good night.
Like a jet aircraft.
That's them, like jets flying
over. Those
blue
wings, they're like synchronized flyers.
They put the blue angels to shame.
Yeah. You got all these events now. And
they're
the
original blue angels.
They are flying in unison at 70 miles an hour, roughly. And when they turn, they're flying very close together. Yeah. But no one ever makes mistakes and hits another one and they get tangled up and fall.
Well, I'm never. Sure.
So how does saltwater do that?
Saltwater put in them, we'll give this month 70 miles an hour. We'll give a mallard about 50.
But the fact that they're synchronized is what's amazing.
Synchronized.
But that's
fly.
Why that sound is happening.
Yeah.
I mean, I tried to describe that sound to Missy the other night because I was telling her, you know, this was the day they came, Friday.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, when I heard that sound, she was like, what sound are you talking about? I was like, it's like when you're at a football stadium and they have the flyby.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, there's no way it sounded like that.
Oh,
I said, I'm telling you, when you're sitting there and here comes 100.
Sounds like a jet.
Plus it does something to a duck hunter. Like when you hear that, it does something to your inside. It's like, excitement level that is hard to describe.
Oh, listen, so the bottom line is, you say, y'all are sitting there, you hear this sound, and you're like, oh, my goodness, that was a big bunch of teal that just came over. But it's 35, 40 minutes before the sun comes up. It's early in the morning. That's when they move. but you hear that sound and you know it's on like a chicken bone. You say, coming. That's there they are.
Yeah.
Well, so, it gets a little lighter and you look up all of a sudden and coming on your right is just about 75 to 100 cutting in hard. Come by, they work about two or three times and down in there they are. Six men shoulder to shoulder, all of them armed with shotguns, and we stand up.
A human being
who has never experienced that, if they could experience that, they would get it. I mean, literally, the sound that they make and the speed at which they're moving, they come by very fast. Don't move. Let them slow down a little. Well, they hook in there and they come by the second time. And they're lower, and they're almost breaking down to fix the light, like an airplane on an airport getting lined up. They'll always come in against the wind, like airplanes. Look, that third pass, when they all just start filling your spread up, your decoys, and they're like 20 yards getting on the water,
it's an amazing thing
to watch six men stand up and boom, 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 boom.
If you don't shoot them when they're – they've lost all their momentum, you're not going to hit them.
Right.
That's right. Fast.
I don't care if it's 200 of them.
So I got a question. So, because I wasn't there. So I heard about the hunt. But we get a lot of questions because we talked about way back a few podcasts ago about your dogs because there was Blue versus the new dog. So I want to know.
Here's the irony of this whole story.
Tell me about this hunt.
I go by myself because I wanted to take my dog. And I've been working with him and I think he's ready. At least to see what's going on. But I didn't want to, you know, I know how our guys are.
Jay sets up a mile and a half below us.
Okay.
By himself, Lone Wolf McQuade.
Because I don't mind. I'm comfortable in my own skin. I have my dog.
Jay says he's the best company he keeps.
He's a mile and a half away.
The best company he keeps is when he's alone.
He's a mile and a half away. I'll tell the front part of the story. He tells the second part.
Well, I'm going to tell the truth.
Okay. But we look up.
This is a bad story for you.
We look up, and here comes 100, I'm estimating it, Blue Wing Teal.
I think it was 150, but somewhere in between 100
they
and
150. They come by like a bunch of jets.
Well, hang on. Let's back up. I'm the one that sent. They come over me first because I was south of y'all, and they came from the south. And they didn't work me. They went out into the middle of the area I was at and worked. And then they headed toward y'all. So I took a cell phone that you do not like and said, hey, they're not to you, because obviously you don't have a cell phone, but Jay was in your blind. I said, there's 150 teal headed in your way. And then you can tell the story.
We look up, and I see them coming left to right, descending rapidly. They buzzed us. They hooked back and buzzed us again. One of those 150, one teal, broke out of the bunch and lit in front of us. Well, the other one saw that. And they're making a sharp bank to come back and join him. We have one out of 150 on the water in front of us, and we're patiently waiting. Unfortunately, Blue, my prize, so-called prize lab, he's on my right. He's antsy to go. He's saying, what's the holdup? How come they're not shooting? I got a duck right here. This dog thinking. All of a sudden, he bolts and runs out there. He's going to catch this teal.
Yeah.
Well, the teal sees him coming. The teal gets up. And look, the dogs and the decoys, that one is flying away. The other 150 are just about in. They see that, see Blue standing out there in the decoy and say, whoop, predator. And they just flare up, and they are gone.
Now, they head toward me.
they're heading toward Jay, so we don't know it.
So you're there with your dog.
Well, I waited for them to shoot. I didn't hear them shoot. I thought, well, okay. So I'm sitting there and a mile away from them, and there's wood ducks coming into this hole that I'm at because it hadn't been hunted all year. So they're coming in, and nobody's fired a shot here. So, and it's tough because I'm having to look wood duck, wood duck, wood duck. Well, about five teal, not the 100, just five, came in low, and I thought, whoa, those were teal because I was in a really brushed up place. So I was just getting a glimpse. So I get up on the bench with my gun, looking for these five teal because I know they lit, but there's at least 100 wood ducks lit on the hole. Well, the wood ducks started getting up when I stood up. And my dog, first time he's ever hunted, he's sitting there. We've already gone through the him jumping out in the decoys because the first wood duck that lit,
he jumped.
He did what Phil's dog did. He, and I said, hey, no, get up here. So he's sitting here, and we've had that talk. But I'm still nervous because he's never been hunting. So anyway, when I get up, all the wood ducks get up. I never see what happened to those five teal, so I guess they just flew on by. But when the wood ducks got up, they went down to the other end of my hole and started lighting because I didn't shoot at them, obviously. Well, when they're like lighting on the other end, I hear the sound. Well, I look up. Here comes the. It looked more than 100 to me. Well, they start like piling in on these wood ducks, which is a little far out of range. So I hit my teal call. Well, when they heard that, they're like, "Hey, there's a teal over there." So then there was literally so many of them, they just start lighting in waves, you know, toward my decoys.
Getting closer to you.
Of course, I've now gotten a problem here because there's only one of me. There's a lot of teal here. I can't kill
six. You can
six.
Only kill six.
So you have to be real, you know, tactful in how you do this. So my
rules
dog,
and regulations, ladies and gentlemen.
Look, my dog.
Law. We talked about law last time.
My dog didn't jump. I raised up, boom, boom. I only shot twice because that's all I needed. And then my third shot, I started shooting the ones that I shot on the first shot because I can't kill but six. Well, my dog, he's never been hunting. They come in, I shoot. He looks up at me after I shoot. I'm like, back. And I mean, it was like that Joker was shot out of a cannon. I mean, he just witnessed one of the greatest things that he'll ever witness in his life.
And
on
he's
day
fired
one,
up too.
And he's just.
Some department in saltwater made particular dogs where they would go get your birds and bring them back. That department in saltwater, you know, the one that made the ducks and the dogs, when saltwater got around to making dogs. They make some dogs, like Labrador Retrievers, they'll go retrieve all of your birds and bring them to you and hand them to you. That's good thinking on
saltwater. So the dog did awesome. Look, about the fourth duck, because at first I was like, this Joker is a machine, you know. I mean, this no problems, because I'm blowing the whistle. You know, I'm saying over. He's, you know, he just. So he got about the fourth one. He got up there, and he didn't want to. He stopped short. So I'm not sure. You know, I think he liked it so much, and I'd only worked with him with dummies or frozen ducks, you know. And so I think he got a little blood in his mouth, and he thought, you know what? I think I'm going to keep this one. So we had to come to an understanding on that. No,
so ladies and gentlemen, here's the point. We're giving you a glimpse to answer your question, what is it that y'all do? Well, that's about 16 days of what we did. Fooling with the teal, unless you've ever participated in that particular thing, going out in God's creation and seeing the birds. We think he made them, not salt water. And but if you've never experienced that, you have missed a lot.
Yeah. And we wanted
to
answer some of your questions that we've been seeing. Somebody said, I keep putting my hand up here.
You keep blocking the
Phil. So when you see this, you know, Phil, we may use that as a sign that Phil's getting too graphic.
Yeah.
But now that my dog is doing really well, I mean, the only thing I'm a little upset about is that he has nowhere to go but down after that. Yeah, you know, I did take him on the following Sunday.
Hunting teal, have dogs that you're trained to go get them, shooting skills. Sounding like them, you have to know what the teal sounds like. We make little duck calls that sound just like them. All those things, and we actually are making a living at it, capitalism. We're taking advantage of what God created, the birds, and he created us, and we're working with it. We're having a big load of fun. We're doing this. Here's the point. None of it's sinful.
That's right.
There's no sin. There's no cursing. There's no anger. We're all out there having a big time.
It's a good lifestyle, hobby.
It's a great lifestyle. That's what we're doing. We raised y'all, you boys, y'all saw that early in your life.
Right.
And we made that part of our makeup on planet Earth. And someone says, you know, that's...
And a byproduct is you're making the environment a better place because, you know, all the things we do.
We provide the habitat for the ducks.
Yeah, we've got almost 1,500 acres of habitat.
Yep. We have thousands of migratory creatures come down that enjoy our place. And we're doing
a wonderful thing for shorebirds and doves and ducks
all kinds
and deer.
Of stuff. So that's a little bit of update on hunting now that season's over. Kind of looking forward to big duck season now in November. So no one likes losing their hair in this circle of people. We haven't lost a lot of hair, so we kind of been, I don't know if that's a blessing or there's something in our genetics, certainly facial hair.
Well, we did have that, you know, when we were kids, the number one go-to was pull the hair out.
Oh, that's right.
Like, that caused, I saw more violent.
From pulling hair.
Responses.
Mom was a hair puller.
Oh, she's a hair puller.
That may be why I've lost so much of mine.
Oh, Willie and I would say, I'd say most of the year, you would have a patch gone. So you go to school and people are like, what happened? It's like, oh, yep, got in a fight. Brother pulled my hair out. Because we always thought it was funny. It was like a hair tattoo.
All I know for sure is hair, it's an interesting thing. It never leaves your face. You're good to go there. It only starts leaving in your head.
Yeah, right, even bald guys.
It stays under your arms. The hair is still there.
Yeah.
And on other parts of your body, I don't want to get graphic here, but you say the hair is still there.
Thank you for that.
But you say, but there's something about that head. Now, I don't know whether it's the waves coming off the brain pan, but hair begins to leave a lot of people's head and when they're 20 years old.
There is some science involved in this. Our friends at Keeps have told us that there's a hormone called DHT. That you lose, and so some people seem to lose it quicker than other people. But they've come up with a way to be able to replace some of that DHT, but do it at a lot cheaper price.
So does this stuff rejuvenate hair?
That's what these guys say. They say 90% effective. And so the problem has been it hadn't been that affordable. So our friends down at Keeps, they want you to be able to save your hair without going through all these processes that people have to go to. So if you'll go to Keeps, KEEPS.com/Phil. So you want, you know, Phil hadn't lost his hair. We want to be like Phil. Keeps.com/Phil. They're going to fix you up with the first month of treatment for free. And then even when you do the treatments, it's far less costly than.
So, and if your kids are pulling each other's hair out, would it work for that?
Probably not. That's playing for Keeps, but not Keeps.com slash Phil.
But it would be an option.
Don't pull hair. Another update I wanted to tell the audience about, because last time we were together, Dad talked about his sister had just passed away. And so we talked a little bit about her and sort of the influence she had. Well, since we were with you guys last time, we had her funeral. And, you know, I don't know how you guys are, you know, in your traditions or your family or whatever with funerals, but, you know, a lot of times they're, you know, super sad. A lot of time it depends on the circumstances by which a person passes away. Tragic things, children. I mean, I've been a part of some, you know, I've preached a lot of funerals, so I've been a part of a lot of really tough times. But with Jan, Dad's youngest sister, we had what I would call a celebration.
Yep.
You know, I mean, it was, and that's what her husband wanted. That's what her kids wanted. So
that was some of the greatest. That was the I think that was the greatest worship experience.
It was amazing.
That I've been a part of.
We were happy for her because we know this first era of the 70, 75, 50, some 20, when physical death comes along.
Right.
Since Jesus conquered that, we look at it, we view it. The text says we should not be. We don't want you to be ignorant about those who fall asleep. Right. Or to grieve like the rest of men who have no hope. Then it says we believe Jesus died and rose again, so we believe when he comes back, he will bring with him those who have fallen asleep.
I thought it was ironic that we, you know, Missy and I have been helping with the, you know, our worship experience on Sunday mornings. And that morning, what they didn't know that, you know, was on hope. But we had planned that like weeks ahead. And it happened to be the day, you know, they did the funeral and they all came in. So I was like, "What? That seems like a bizarre coincidence."
Her funeral was on a Sunday. Yeah. So obviously we had time together as a church family. And then we had, it was really just an extension of that day.
That's what it was.
And our church, which holds, you know, 1,000 people, was packed, and which shows you a lot of her influence. And so it was really interesting, I thought, that so many people would come out on a Sunday afternoon.
Well, and we had the Mia Moo. Fundraiser and the family, some of the families that we've helped in. And so what we do on that, just a quick, because that thing was awesome.
It was great.
We raise money the night before. We have like a little charity poker tournament. We'd have an auction, and it's kind of a, you know, we have just people from the world who want to, you know, buy tickets and be there. Of course, I introduced Jesus in a clever way and had many conversations after it was over, because some of those people, that was the first time they'd ever been introduced to Jesus, and it was in a setting that they never thought it would happen. And they saw how we're helping these kids and these principals. And our main verse is these kids find some joy in their suffering because it produces perseverance. Perseverance, character, hope, Romans 5, 1 through 4.
And so most of these kids are suffering from the
cleft palate
and lip, cleft lip and palate. But they're severe cases, you know, like it, most of them. And like me is a severe case, but I mean, we had one of the kids there, Cameron, African-American boy, he had, you know, four major skull surgeries. And, you know, it affected his personality, but one of the greatest hearts and spirits. He looked like he's about 10, you know. Mm-hmm. And but you could just tell, I mean, you could see the scars, you know, on his head. I mean, they're trying to get his skull where it'll maintain the rest of his body, you know. But you meet a kid like that, he's so fun and intelligent, and he's been through so much, it's just inspiring. But so we had 27 of those families at the service. So and it happens to be on Hope, which once again wasn't planned. It wasn't because they were coming. And so it was just it just seemed like a God-ordained, orchestrated day.
And Jen was instrumental in converting me.
Well, and then I thought it was interesting. So at the service, which, by the way, those of you who are watching, listening to Unashamed, you can go to our church Facebook, WFR Church, on Facebook, and actually watch it. It's about an hour and a half long if you're interested. But Dad opened it with prayer, but also I thought just a really good biblical view of what.
Well, they can watch the funeral.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, it's there. It's already had like 3,000 people have already watched
it. Well, I'm going to tell you, it was awesome. And I want to say this. If you ever wanted a testimony to a person on their life or a legacy, her two sons, I know you spoke at it and you did a good job, but her two sons, I mean, were. That was two of the most incredible speeches.
It was amazing.
I've ever heard. The, you know, intellect, the articulation.
The funeral of their mother.
Yeah. Well, it was just.
Well, here's the thing, Jay. My role, they wanted me to be humorous, and so I was. I basically threw the Dashers under the bus. They're my cousins.
Were easy targets. And we do that.
That's what they wanted, so I did that. But it's funny, her sons, Zach and Grant. You know, most people when they're at a funeral, you talk about the person and you tell the good things about them. And I mean, that's why I've done it for years. But they did a little of that, but most of what they did was honor Christ, who she honored, which I just thought was really a great approach to.
Of course, our family doesn't sugarcoat anything.
Right.
I think that's the first time I've ever heard in a funeral when one of the sons said, you know, I'll tell you about my mom. She was a sinner. And most of the time, people just don't talk about that, right, you know. Yeah. But, I mean, it's like, well, we're all sinners, technically, you know. But he made a really good point about that, about how she zeroed in on repentance in her life. Because she would encourage others to do so, which is what she helped do with you.
Yep.
That was her big deal with you. You need to repent. Look, she told me, I'd say half a dozen times over some argument we had, you just need to repent. You know, I mean, that. And when they said that, it really brought back a lot of memories about her being so bold.
She was very bold. So look, so we're heading, we leave the funeral. Tradition down here is you have a funeral procession.
Oh, I know where you're going with this.
So you get a deputy sheriff. Now the preacher, you know, I'm always at the front of the line. They put the preacher up front, even ahead of the body. It's kind of, you know, I'm leading her to the, you know, to the graveside. So I'm up front, as I usually am.
It's kind of silly.
It's kind of silly, but that's the way they do it. Okay. So I'm in the front of the line. I'm right behind the funeral guys and the deputy sheriff.
I'm like eighth back.
So Jace is behind me. So I look up. We're going down through West Monroe. They kind of got a route they take in. So we're making our turns.
There's a lot of traffic.
We're making our turns. I look up in my rearview mirror. Now, I got a deputy sheriff with lights flashing in front of me. He's leading us out. And they stop, you know, try to get people to stop at the light. I look up in my rearview mirror. And I see my brother Jace being pulled over by a state trooper.
Yeah.
Out of the funeral procession.
I've told y'all the story here. So, you know how you're following, you got your flashing lights. And I'm already emotional just, you know, after the funeral. Missy and I had not seen.
And it's a long procession.
Oh, that was the largest.
It's 100 cars.
Yeah, it was 100 cars. I'm like sixth or eighth in the batting order.
Because you're a pallbearer.
So yeah, because I'm a pallbearer. So I'm just following the crowd, you know. So we're going along. And when I get on interstate, which it's just traffic, you know, horrible. The cop, I look in my rearview mirror and there's a state trooper flashing his lights, you know. And I saw him do this, and I was like, hey, you know, I was like, we need this guy. Because this traffic is hard.
I thought
he saw the procession and said, these people need some help. We have too many cars. And I was like, hey, probably a Duck Dynasty fan. That's what I was thinking.
So you thumbs up and still
I'm
moving.
I'm thumbs up. And well, he's like, all of a sudden, it's like we're car racing, me and him. And he keeps pointing, you know, and I'm like, hey, I was kind of remember that movie Uncle Buck, you know, when they were like, you're going the wrong
way. No, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Well, yeah, that's what it was. They were like, you're going the wrong way. And he was like, hey. It was funny.
How does he know where we're going?
Yeah, it was a funny thing. Well, he kept doing that. So finally, he literally gets so close to me, and he's like, I'm reading his lips now. He's like, pull over. And at first, I thought, he's kidding. So I just like, yeah. So what I didn't realize was he's not kidding, and the more this goes on,
he wants you to stop.
Oh, he's just short of pulling out his pistol and sending shots across the bow. So I told Missy, I think he wants us to pull over. And she's like, well, that would be dumb. We're in a funeral procession. I was like,
you got all people behind.
So I look back and he's just screaming. Look, I can see his veins in his face. I was like, oh no, he wants us to pull over. So I pull over and Missy's like, well, this should be good. And I was just numb because of what just happened. I'm like, I have no idea what this is about. As soon as I rolled down that window, he just lit into me. He's like, you ran that red light back there, you're gonna cause a wreck. There was a car, and he was just giving so much information so fast. Are you crazy? What's wrong? And I just was like, I didn't know what to say. And I said nothing. And he's like, what do you have to say? And I was like, I could say nothing because I didn't even know what to say. And so Missy went, we're in a funeral procession.
It's only the way Missy can do.
The way she said it. I mean, then he looked at her. And, of course, you know, she's not ugly. She's well-dressed. Because I think we had some facial profiling going on here.
But you've got a suit on, like a coat on.
Well, I did, but now. You know what I mean?
I know.
You know, he didn't recognize me. Because most people in our area, they're like, oh, Jace. You know, I've been pulled over a few times, unfortunately, to say. And they're usually like, Jace, what are you doing, you know? And so I was like, he doesn't know who I am. But then when he saw her, it didn't make sense. And so then I could see the wheels turning in his mind. He's like, well, yeah, I did see your lights flashing. I'm thinking. But then he's like, well, why wasn't there a cop at the intersection? I said nothing because I'm like, isn't that your job. So why wasn't there a cop? Y'all just need to be careful. Because I was waiting now that he's realized we're in a funeral procession. I kept waiting for that. You know what? That's my bad. Maybe I should have got there. And nothing, you know. Which it made me mad
so
an hour later.
Did he just
later.
Say, carry on?
Yeah, he said, careful. Well, you need to be careful. You like to cause a wreck. But and see, then left. But I was thinking.
So I talked to Lisa's behind you. Yeah. So I talked about this with Lisa later, and she's like, well, he did pull out in front of a car and run the red light. I said, babe, when you're in a funeral procession, you don't run red lights.
There's no running red lights.
Yeah. We're all part of the procession, and it's up to the people to recognize.
Most of the intersection had a car.
But that
I
one
thought
didn't.
When I saw him coming, I looked in my rearview mirror and watched the whole thing. I said, he's just got there. He's running a little late, so he wasn't able to stop the traffic. But then I saw him getting down on Jace, and I said, well, I think he's got an escort going, but he's behind Jace. So
it's weird.
I said, I wonder how that's going to work.
I mean, the disappointing thing is the guy didn't apologize. You know, I'm like, I get it.
You didn't notice.
We almost had a wreck, which I never saw the car you were talking about. I didn't run a red light. I'm in a funeral procession.
It wasn't that close. I was watching it.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Because you were in front of me, and you turned, and the cars were just coming, but... But he had plenty of, you know, it was not that close.
Well, look, I'll tell you this. After the funeral, you know, after the burial, so we had to get gas because I was in Missy's car, which never has gas in it. And she's like, I think we can make it back. I'm like, no, there's not, you know, this beats walking. I'm not walking home after the funeral. So we stop at gas station. I'm getting gas. Well, another cop pulled in. I thought, here we go.
Here we go.
But he was just getting gas right beside me. And I said, look, I want to ask you. He did recognize me, but I said, I want to ask you. I said, I want to tell you what happened. And, you know, you tell me what happened in this situation. I said, I'm just going to tell you exactly what happened. So I told him the story. And he was upset. At the police officer, one in his attitude, one that he never acknowledged, you know, that he made a mistake here, which was fine. It happens.
Yeah.
And he should have just said, yeah, and he should have been trying to help. So it made me feel better that I run up on another. And look, I'm thankful for our police officers and all of them.
Right.
This guy got it wrong, and he just wouldn't. He didn't make it right. You know, he just should have said, yeah, okay, I understand what happened. Because, I mean, he was hot.
When he thought you were ignoring him, which made it worse.
Well, yeah, he thought I was ignoring him, but I was thinking, I don't know what to say. I literally was, and I you know, it was we just came from an emotional experience. I was kind of zoned out. And I just,
of course, you had law enforcement in front of you with their lights going. So it was just a.
But you did the right thing because a lot of people, what they do, and you were just doing out of stunned silence, but a lot of people get in their face. Well, that would have been the worst thing to do.
Oh, that's right.
Because even if he had made a mistake, you get in his face and you just escalate everything.
Well, Missy had that tone, which he didn't really recognize it, but I recognized that tone.
You'd seen that before.
When she said, we're in a funeral procession. Well, because I've been
idiot.
Around.
That she left off, you idiot.
You idiot. Think about it was what she was thinking, and I knew it because I knew that tone, you know, because she's giving me that
I
tone.
Will have to admit, I've never heard of an individual being called out of a funeral.
It's the first.
So close to the front. I'm like, the hearse was like three cars above me.
I know it.
What are we doing here?
Well, as soon as I saw it all happen, then Jace gets to the thing and he's telling the story at the graveside. And I was like, well, we're going to have to talk about this on the podcast because only Jace would be the one called out of a funeral procession.
You know what it seemed like? It seemed like I all of a sudden was back in a Duck Dynasty episode. Because if you ran that, people would say, well, that's the most unrealistic thing ever.
That could never happen.
I mean, the guy's just railing on me. And here's what's another funny thing. Like three of our cars with their flashing lights, they were behind the cop. They pulled over too. So I was like, why did they stop? They thought, oh, we're stopping now.
Yeah,
and so this when I got to the graveside, Amy, our cousin, was one of them. I was like, "Well, why did y'all pull over?" And she's like, "Well, we didn't know the way to the gravesite
because you're in the line.
He's in the line.
It was quite the traffic jam. I'll admit that going all the way.
The interstate stopped. Oh. Look, they stopped. People blowing their horns.
Oh yeah,
it was horrible.
So we all made it. We got her in the ground.
We can only introduce our subject matter because that was long. But I think those were. You know, those were two big things that happened in our lives. I mean, that teal hunt was the greatest hunt I've been on in, I'd say, 4 to 5 years. Yep. Would you agree? Oh,
yeah, we hadn't had anything like that.
And and then part of life is, you know, I mean, dying is a part of life in an ironic statement.
The text the Apostle Paul told the Corinthians was, if it's preached that Christ has been raised from the dead, how can some of you say that there is no resurrection of the dead? If there's no resurrection of the dead, then not even Christ has been raised. And if Christ has not been raised, our preaching is useless and so is your faith. Down toward the end, he said, those who have fallen asleep, if there's no resurrection in Christ, are lost. If there's no resurrection, we're done. In fact, he says, if only for this life we have hope in Christ, we are to be pitied more than all men.
Right.
Once that gets set in a human being's brain and he realizes physical death has been conquered, God becomes flesh so that by his death he might free those who all their lives were held in slavery by their fear of death.
Yeah.
You know.
So the point is, in September...
It is a hope that you don't get anywhere else.
In September of 2019, we're telling you a story about our aunt, Dad's sister, who lived by faith.
Oh, no doubt about it.
And in fact, she was one of the most, you know, holy, righteous. I mean, in her lifestyle, self-discipline.
Sure
that you're.
Well, she was one of those people.
We're all going to be in a bind.
That's right.
But she was one of those people that didn't have the drastic before and after.
That's right. She lived her whole life for the Almighty.
Yeah. And, well, I mean, we all make mistakes. We get it.
Yeah. She had no heathen part of her life.
She had no missing links like I did, like you did, Dad.
And
like
she was very bold. She was very, which, you know, Missy, it spurned quite the conversation when we got home because Missy said, you know, the more I think about y'all's family, I'm thinking, what happened to create? What was that about? She was asking about my grandparents, your parents. I mean, what was the backdrop to create these type of people? Because when you start reflecting, which is why, you know, the only reason there were tears is when you think back on memories of our lives and experiences with her. That's kind of what, you know, funerals do. But and there were tears of joy because she was suffering.
Yeah, she had Alzheimer's.
To a high degree. And but I thought it was a legitimate question, so we kind of spent the rest of the night analyzing how we were raised. And because I told her, I was like, my grandparents, they pretty well were more active probably in raising us.
Well, I think you and I had a unique perspective from all of our cousins, and I guess Willie too, because they 15 years of our formative crucial years, they were living next door to you and Mom. Yeah. So the rest of the cousins, it's really funny, Jace, because when I have conversations with them, they don't see them the same way we see them. In fact, some of my cousins are like, oh, my grandparents were so aloof. And because, you know, they were kind of like you are, Dad, and I guess to us to a certain extent, not weird. Super, it's kind of strange, not super like huggy, feely, touchy, you know, kind of standoffish. So they just thought, well, I don't know what happened. You know, I don't know. They don't have a lot of memories that we have.
So as we walk through this hall of faith and we're looking at these individuals' lives, what's amazing, Al, all these, everything written in the past was for our learning. All these great men and women of faith that we're going through in the podcast, all these people were all commended for their faith, yet none of them received what had been promised at the time.
Yeah.
If they were counted as righteous, God had planned something better for us so that only together with us would they be made perfect, all of them waiting on Jesus.
That's the last verse in Hebrews 11.
Yeah, Hebrews 11.
That's pretty cool.
Oh, that's great.
Well, then it goes to that next verse, which, look, I'm of the opinion when they get to chapter 12 and it says, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, I just think.
They're not dead.
Where's the verse where it says.
Including Janice Ellen, my sister, dead.
And when it says, to him all are alive, you know, when Jesus was sharing that, when he said, he was talking about he said, I am.
Right.
And I think it was the scenario where they said, well, what happens if a person is married seven times?
Yeah.
Which was, I thought, a legitimate question.
Right.
Now,
who would be his wife in the
resurrection? Right. Because marriage, when you think about what God has joined together, you know, let not man separate. So it was a legitimate question. But Jesus came up with that. You're ignorant of the power of God and of the scriptures. He was like, that's a dumb question.
Yeah.
But then he says, you know, people will neither marry or be given in marriage
in heaven.
But then he says he's the God of the living and to him, you know, and to God all are alive. So, I mean, it's happened. And you read obscure verses like the one in Ephesians that seems to have the tense wrong when it says we're saved by grace and it says, but he seated us in the heavenly realms.
Right.
People are like, well, what does that mean? But, you know, God just is.
Right.
And so he doesn't look at, he's not waiting. He's not. He just is. He kind of sees it all before it happens. That's why we have such a hard time relating to him, and that's why he became a man, Jesus, so you can relate. But there's no doubt in my mind after reading Hebrews 11 and the first verse is 12:1, that in some spiritual way, some presence of God, they, in essence, kind of like angels, are witnesses to what's going on.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I think that brings comfort and strength, you know.
I believe that.
Yeah. Too.
It kind of reminds me of that story, you know, in Kings where the guy, he was in fear because here comes this army, you know. Was that Elisha?
Yeah.
And he said, you know, open his eyes so he can see, because he wasn't scared at all.
Second Kings.
And that voice coming out of that bush, I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He didn't say I was their God, but they're dead now, so they're gone. Nope. He said, I am their God. And then Jesus said, he's not the God of the
before
dead,
Abraham
but
born.
Of the living.
Yeah, before Abraham was born, I am.
That's right.
Same thing.
I think most religious people believe what we're saying. Where they miss it a lot of times is they miss that there's going to be a bodily resurrection. And yep. Which I'm not sure why.
Yeah, it's hard to read 1 Corinthians 15 and miss it, because it's pretty clear.
I'm telling you.
There.
Well, Jesus had a bodily resurrection. Exactly. He said, look, now it was, just because we can't understand the body.
Right.
Because we can't. All I know.
We can't see us in another realm.
Well, I can't see it. I don't, you know, that's why we have so many superhero movies. There's no doubt about it. People read the Bible or they have that in their subconscious, and we want to make that. We want to have superpowers.
Yeah.
Well, we actually have a real way to have superpowers.
Yeah.
To fly, everything.
Oh, you can
Superman.
Fly. You can have stuff bounce off of you. Look, you can remember when he said they had the room was locked and they were in fear, and then he came through the door. I mean, I can't wait till I can do that.
Yeah, my little speech at Jan's funeral was, it's God who has made us for this very purpose, separation from our body, and has given us the spirit as a deposit, guaranteeing what's to come. Therefore, we're always confident and know that as long as we're at home in the body, we are away from the Lord. We live by faith, not by sight. We're back on this faith. We are confident, I say, and check this out, and would prefer, this is the Apostle Paul talking, to be away from the body and at home with the Lord. He said leaving the body, although it's a kind of a shock to our system, he said, you're better off on the other side. So we make it our goal to please him, whether we're at home in the body, as Jan was,
right,
or away from it, as she is now.
Well, let me read this.
Pretty cool.
Pretty cool.
In Philippians, you know, 3:19, it says, it talks about those who are not, you know, following Jesus, and they're actually enemies of the cross. It gives a recipe for how that happens. It says their mind is on earthly things. But then in verse 20, it says, but our citizenship is in heaven, and we eagerly await a Savior from there, the Lord Jesus Christ, who by the power that enables him to bring everything under his control, and here's the key phrase, will transform our lowly bodies so that they will be like his glorious body.
It's a wild thought.
So when you look, post-resurrection, just think, name the characteristics of Jesus' body.
Because he was here 40 days after he raised.
He gave many convincing proofs of his lives. Right. That's Acts 1:3. Right. And he spoke about the kingdom of God, by the way. But so you just start naming them. Well, he could walk through walls. So he could transport. This old beam me up, Scotty, he could actually do that.
That's right. He was the purple guy on X-Men. You know, that guy, he looks like a whirling dervish, and then all of a sudden he's in the other room.
Yeah, you can do that.
Yeah, but Jesus was doing that first.
And you can fly without any kind
way of... Way before, like, Star Trek ever entered the picture.
Well, I think that's where they get these ideas.
That's exactly where
they say, oh, boy, look what science has done. No, you got that from here, because that's a supernatural ability. That's what gets me. Everybody that I have these debates, they're like, science, science. And I'm like, but aren't you the one that's watched every superhero, super Marvel movie... you know, science fiction,
X-Men,
Star Trek. Aren't we
Star Wars.
Going all through? Well, you're having to use godly principles, because the only person that can do that is Jesus.
Yep.
You try it. You try to find that in science. Not going to happen. There's a reason they call it science fiction. So we're part of the science faction, which would be followers of Jesus. I've used that before.
Science faction.
Some guy will be preaching that Sunday. He's like, I heard on a podcast.
Now, either they were...
I'm in science faction.
I go back to my
original. Use it as there is no.
Al, either these were raving lunatics writing this down, but it goes way back.
Yeah.
Way back from the beginning. The narrative remains the same.
Right.
The Moses standing there, the bush... God's speaking out of this bush. He's thinking, how come that thing won't burn up? You know, I'm the God of Abraham, Isaac. And then look, and Moses mysteriously just appears 5,000 years later, on top of the mountain, when Jesus went up there, the transfiguration, Moses and Elijah, they're all sitting there, and Jesus with them, they're just carrying on a little conversation. How's it going here?
Which is pretty great. Tell some more about what Jesus did, because you just told one. I mean, he had a few other ones that he did.
Well, you think about it. Another place is when the two guys were on the road to Emmaus. I love this story, because it says Jesus came up with them, but he kept himself from being recognized. Mm-hmm. I thought, oh boy. So you can
changeling.
They make movies about it all the time.
Yeah, shapeshifter. He was a shapeshifter. And then not only that, when he they didn't recognize him.
Right at the very end.
When he got to the to Jerusalem, or no, it wasn't Jerusalem.
Emmaus.
On the road to Emmaus, he got to Emmaus. He ate with his disciples. Then he had the ability. He masked himself again. And then he had the ability to reveal himself. So they were like, oh, it's Jesus.
That was him. He's gone.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, it looked up and he was gone.
Vanished.
I mean. But here's what the exciting part to me is. In John 20, he had the fish fry. So even though, when in that same context, he showed himself to Thomas. Remember, and he said, look at my scars.
Yep.
So
he was able to show his injuries.
It was him.
It was his body.
It was his body, but it just could do all these tricks. But it also could eat fish.
It's called, in my language, a redneck language, meshing with the atoms.
Yeah. That's good.
That's beyond redneck.
Meshing with the atoms.
What excited me, and I think I told this story before, when we went to Israel, and I saw that the Sea of Galilee, which is on the bank of where he had this fish fry in John 20, and then I understood it. I'm like, oh yeah, he got him some flatheads, but ate it with his disciples, and they had this real powerful moment.
So he could ingest food with the particular body he had.
That's right.
So look what that brings to the table in the afterlife. Because think about your fondest memory. My fondest memories in life are,
connected to catfish.
Yeah, fish fry. All the times the reason we spent 15 minutes talking about that duck hunt, because it was exciting. It was like a once every 4 or 5 year deal, because the teal just kept coming. We were witnessing the migrate. We call it the Grand Passage. They're just flying. Then you go back the next day, zero. Back to reality. One day, it was awesome. And to have that experience and the ability for him, even in his imperishable body, he wasn't eating the fish to stay alive. No. He's imperishable.
That's right.
He left. He's never died again, never even had a cold since then. But he ate the fish because he could. And that's just what's always struck me.
How could these guys in that time frame, beginning in the Old Testament and bringing it all forward, Al, faith being the same from start to finish, how could these guys have dreamed up this story, really?
And they did it supposedly being made from salt water. That's a pretty amazing imagination.
You know what's another thing? Another verse.
Unless it's real.
Another verse.
You talk about an imagination.
The first verse I wanted to read after that is because, he leaves in Acts 1.
By the way, that was his last physical act.
Yeah.
Describe that one. Without a jetpack.
It was literally the shots you see on Superman, which how many Superman movies have there been?
Tons.
You see him flying. Well, Jesus actually did that. So people, I think that's why the world, they're like, well, this just can't be true, because you got him doing the same thing Superman.
Jesus wrote the script for a lot of movies
Pretty much 2,000 years later. Super Marvel movie. Mm-hmm. That's why that verse in Colossians 1 where it said he holds all things together.
Yep.
Because if you can control the atoms and the molecules, well, you literally could do everything that any super Marvel character does.
Literally anything.
Because what makes it interesting to watch is that the atoms and molecules have no effect on them.
And we know the atoms and the molecules are there. The question is, I love these atheists, but I'll just ask them, where'd they come from? How could these particles that you can't see, but we know they exist, where did it come from?
And what makes every movie great? Look,
those things couldn't have come from nothing.
Right.
And look what makes it great at the end. They always use this character who you think he's dead, then he comes back. How many times has that been used in a movie?
Countless.
And Jesus is the only person that actually pulled that off. They're like, we killed him. He's dead. Go about your merry way. Let's drink and be merry. And then, boop. Oh, no, he's back. And not only is he back, he's now indestructible.
Yeah. And they wonder why we follow Jesus.
That's true.
Only shot we have, Al.
That's exactly right. So, as we talked about today, you see the importance of faith. We talked about last time how law was introduced, and we talked about that we want to be faith followers. So we illustrated that today. Next time we'll kind of tie back in to what you saw in the Old Testament story that we left off of, where what happens when you don't follow faithfully.
Three family members, a dad and his sons, carrying on a conversation about their view of the world, how they see it. Mm. It's just a conversation. Hey, take it or leave it.
That's right.
We've decided to take it, but, you know, people say, it's too wild to believe. I'm like, whatever.
Damn. Well, and it's like, as we discuss, real life enters the equation. You know, we
when physical death comes, Jace, you look at your own flesh and blood, Jesus, Janice Ellen, your own family members, you say, you know what? It's the only shot we have. The only chance.
Well, I thought about it for the first time. I thought about, you know, I'm going to be laying here one day unless the Lord comes back.
So am I.
And so I don't. What are my kids going to say about me? You know, or
you know what I also thought is we share this and the viewers can't connect because most of them, you know, they didn't know Jan. But you buried your sister 3 days ago. And I thought, you know, today when I woke up, I thought it's been 3 days since she was buried. And Jesus had that same issue and he came back. You just think about it. If she walked in this room right now and said, hey, Phil, guess what? I'm back. Well, let me tell you.
It'd be her podcast.
We'd be out. I'd say, where else do you want to go later? What else do you have planned for?
Show us what you can do, X-Men, Avenger.
I try to think about that after funerals because they are heavy and they are emotional, but I always think about that third day because I think this is what we believe. This is real to us. It's a good reminder, not that they're dead, and that we have hope, but that 3 days later, Jesus answered that problem. So this was the day. This is the day that she comes back.
So check us out in the future on Unashamed, these moments of faith we're going to continue to talk about. Be sure and like us on Facebook. You can subscribe on YouTube, iTunes. That keeps you up to date on all our episodes and also lets you tell other people about the podcast. We love it. We're having fun doing it, so we're glad you're along for the ride. We are so glad you're watching and listening to the Unashamed podcast. Be sure to like us on Facebook, subscribe on YouTube and iTunes. That's going to keep you up to date with all the new episodes, and it's also going to let other people find out about our podcast. So keep spreading the word and watching and listening to Unashamed with Phil Robertson.